Well, good morning. This is Per Fagrang. I'm guest hosting Friday Talk Radio today. And today, as everyone, I'm sure everyone knows, is the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in Dallas. So there's been a lot of comment on it in the media, on the radio, in the newspapers. And so that's going to be our topic today. I'd like to outline some of the conspiracy theories has got a bad rap these days. We're sort of trained to roll our eyes and look upward when we hear the word conspiracy, but they do happen. You know, they happen all the time. If you go to any courthouse and you hear cases being tried, you will hear conspiracies being alleged quite a lot. And the government alleges conspiracies by various so-called terrorists. And there's a strange logic at play here, because if a person can be part of a terrorist conspiracy without actually doing anything criminal, if terrorists are planning on doing some act and you happen to give one of them a ride someplace, you might be charged with aiding and abetting a conspiracy. But there are several outstanding theories as to who killed John Kennedy and why. One is that the mob did it. And actually, we discussed it when I interviewed Tom Hartman Wednesday. We discussed this because Tom Hartman and an author named Lamar Waldron wrote a book a few years back about this. And Lamar Waldron is also updating that book by himself. And the theory there is that the Godfathers, Carlos Marcello in New Orleans and Santo Trafficante in Tampa, really hated Bobby Kennedy because he was out to get them, and this was their way of getting back. And that they used a we can go in more detail on that later, but they sort of they were in cahoots, the CIA, already, but they kind of had a plot within a plot to kill Kennedy. And speaking of Tom Hartman, he will be at Powell's tonight at 7:30 talking about his book, The Collapse of 2016. And starts at 7:30, but I think If I were going to go, I would go a little early because there might be a lot of people there. Place fills up sometimes. So Tom Hartman tonight at Powell's. Another of course, a theory that most of us are aware of is that the CIA did it. And they did it because probably the main reason being that President Kennedy had fired Alan Dulles as head of the CIA, and that also that President Kennedy was planning on pulling troops out of Vietnam. And oddly enough, maybe not so oddly at all, is that Alan Dulles was on the Warren Commission, which supposedly ascertain the truth, the facts about the Kennedy assassination. Another theory is that Lyndon Johnson did it, that he was afraid he'd be dropped from the ticket in 1964, and that he had a lot of control in Texas, being from Texas, and that he kind of orchestrated this. Another theory is that Lee Harvey Oswald did it with the help of with Cuban help or inspiration. And supposedly Oswald visited Cuban officials in Mexico City and planned this thing. This was alleged in a book that's getting a lot of press these days called A Cruel and Shocking Act, The Secret History of the Kennedy Assassination by Philip Sheehan. And then finally, there is the belief that Oswald acted alone. He was just a weird guy, and he had a rifle and a grudge, and he did it all by himself. Of course, there are other theories, too. You know, some are really seem kind of unreal to me. And I will say that, you know, I do not do reptilian creatures from outer space. And so, though, but the ones I outlined are the main theories. The CIA theory is well presented in a book called JFK and the Unspeakable by James W. Douglas. And he was interviewed. He was interviewed on, I believe it was on Flashpoints yesterday. And it's this book, I highly recommend it. It is in great detail outlining two sort of converging sequences of events. One is how Kennedy, his relations with the military and the intelligence people in Washington, which can accurately be described as poisonous, and also about the events leading up to the assassination, how Lee Oswald was kind of manipulated by the CIA, and goes into great detail and lots of footnotes and citations. So this is an excellent book. And speaking of the unspeakable, tonight there'll be another event called Project Unspeakable, and it is a dramatic reading from James Douglas's book, and that is tonight at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church at 1011 Southwest 12th, the 12th in Maine. So that is happening tonight. Two things happening tonight: Tom Hartman at Powell's and Project Unspeakable at the First Unitarian Church. So anyway, if people want to call in, what do you think about the assassination? What did you believe was a conspiracy? Do you think Oswald did it all by himself? Number to call is 503-231-8187. Here I might say that talking about conspiracy theories in general, like I said before, you know, they happen all the time. They have their own logic. The government charges conspiracies by terrorists, and where no act is really innocent. If you're part of a terrorist conspiracy, anything you do is can be a guilty act. Now, a lot of people, a lot of people on the left oppose conspiracy theories on principle. And they prefer what they call an institutional analysis. And this sort of fits in with general sort of a point of view about history, that history is made not by great men, so-called, or individuals. It's made by millions of people kind of acting together. History is created sort of by groups of people, by movements, institutions, and they articulates this belief is Noam Chomsky, who is written and spoken a great many good things, but I don't think this is one of them personally. Chomsky does not believe in conspiracies, or if they exist, they are not important. That the real what really moves history is sort of done in this more collective way. And another example of that would be a few weeks ago here on KABU, when we were talking about KPFA in Berkeley, And Paul Rowland interviewed a bunch of people, among them Larry Bensky, who is one of Pacifica Radio's reporters. And Larry Bensky, they were talking about Pacifica Radio, but Bensky kind of interjected that he really hated conspiracy theories, and he said something to the effect that the ruling class gets what it wants just in normal operations. And, well, we might question that. Do they always get what they want? We might ask, what are normal operations? Are normal operations done right there in the public gaze, or do some operations happen in secret? Which is kind of what conspiracies are all about. That's a conspiracy, I guess, legally, is two or more people acting together and to do something either illegal or immoral or something they want hidden, and that is what a conspiracy is. It's very simple, nothing mysterious about it. It happens right here on Earth. So one interesting thing is after the Kennedy assassination, President Lyndon Johnson charged Chief Justice of the Supreme Court Earl Warren with gave him the task of supervising a supposedly thorough investigation into the assassination. And the story goes that Johnson told Warren very forcefully that there were too many people believing that the Cubans were behind it, and that the one way to avoid basically a third world war would be to convince the American people that the assassination of President Kennedy was not a conspiracy by anyone, that it was a work of one lone deranged individual, namely Lee Oswald. And we'll get back to that later, but right now we have a phone call. Werner's on the line. Hey, welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Thank you. Well, I wanted to talk about the theory that the CIA killed Kennedy.
Okay.
Because I've spoken with a number of former CIA agents who've grown consciences, and the one point, Phil Agee was the one who made it the most dramatically, but they all said that they didn't really believe that the CIA had ever been a rogue agency.
Okay.
It answers directly to the president and would not take part in an assassination. However,
well, wait, they would not do an assassination without presidential permission?
Exactly.
Okay.
They would only kill someone if the president ordered it.
Okay.
However, when you lay off a CIA agent, he no longer has any loyalty to you. But he's still got all his connections. He's still got all of his nasty skills that he's learned. And Kennedy had laid off a number of CIA agents, including the head of the CIA, Dulles,
right,
and also Papa Bush, and possibly Nixon.
Yes. Do you know any? You know, I've heard that. In fact, I saw the other day on the internet, I saw a picture supposedly of George Bush the elder taken in Dallas. And, well, it could have been him, but it's hard to tell. But anyway, do you have any more information on that?
The only thing I've heard that George Bush the senior,
mm-hmm,
claims that he doesn't know where he was when Kennedy was killed.
Yeah, that's kind of odd, isn't it?
Do you know anybody who doesn't know where they were when Kennedy was killed?
I don't know. I know where I was.
I was 7 years old, and I remember.
Uh-huh.
It was one of the most dramatic moments in our country's history.
Uh-huh,
How
yes.
How could you not know? So, I don't know who killed him, and we'll probably never know who killed him. I think there's a parallel later on in history when the report came out from the Church Commission about all the misdeeds of both the FBI and the CIA, particularly the assassination of Allende, and
mm-hmm,
the Carter was president at the time, and he laid off a bunch of covert ops guys, one of whom probably, now this is a bit of speculation, but Ronald Reagan's campaign manager and the head of the October surprise team was, his name is escaping me, but he was later the head of his CIA.
Okay.
When you made him head of the CIA, it's unlikely that you would put someone in charge of the CIA who had no experience with them. So he probably had been laid off by Carter, and Carter, of course, really got thrashed with some dirty dealings and the whole Iran-Contra, you know, paying the Iranians to hold the hostages. And
well, it's interesting that, you had, besides a Warren Commission, you had a... later on, you had a House subcommittee, I believe, on assassinations, and they concluded from evidence that there was more than one shooter. And I think they used audio evidence, the sound of gunshots and all that, and they concluded that there was at least one more shooter. But then that was disputed later on, but the idea of the lone shooter has been criticized within government too.
Yeah, well, the magic bullet theory was a little silly. Oh,
that's another one. Yeah, yes.
And the Zapruder film clearly showed the opposite of what it was reported to have shown. And
how do you mean?
The reports that from I can't remember which news person it was who saw it, maybe Dan Rather. He reported that Kennedy's head moved suddenly forward, indicating he'd been shot from the rear.
Oh, okay.
See the film, it moves back and to the left.
Right.
Which would indicate that the shot came from the grassy knoll.
Yeah, right, okay.
But, there's a point where I'm not sure it really matters who did it. I think it is enough to recognize that we're probably never going to be able to elect our way out of our problems, that we can put up good leaders and they can mow them down.
Well, okay.
If they can't buy them off or defeat them with lots of money, they can just shoot them.
Okay. And well, the interesting...
I don't mean to be completely hopeless, though. Mm-hmm. I think that the lesson is that we have to have a leaderless revolution, which puts more onus on every single one of us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We've all got to be the leader.
Okay. Well, it's interesting that Kennedy himself, is not that he was a hardcore progressive or even a liberal, but he certainly did offend the military and the intelligence community and just by being a kind of a rational guy with a sense of history who all of a sudden realized how close he came to war in the Cuban Missile Crisis. So it doesn't take a radical person to offend these people. To me, that's an important lesson. Anyway, thank you very much for your call.
Good talking with you. Thanks for taking me. Bye now.
Well, the number to call is 231-8187. Oh, I got more callers on the line. Hello, you're on the air. LJ, how are you?
How's it going, brother?
Oh, pretty good. How are you doing?
Oh, great. Thank you very much. I want to refer you and the audience to the December 5th issue of the Rolling Stone.
Uh-huh.
And it's an article written by Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Yes, I read that. Yes,
JFK versus the War Machine.
Yes.
And as you pointed out, General Curtis LeMay.
Oh, he's crazy.
really, really hated Kennedy.
He did.
And one of the quotes that stood out for me from this article in the Rolling Stone was, and I'm quoting, "During the Cuban Missile Crisis, my father told me the Soviet ambassador that JFK was worried that the military would overthrow him and seize power."
That's right. Yes, definitely. And during the Bay of Pigs invasion, President Kennedy, he refused to provide U.S. troops or provide air cover. Right. This really enraged the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Oh, did it ever.
And then, of course, it enraged the Cuban exiles. And later, during the missile crisis, LeMay, who was the head of the Air Force at the time, mm-hmm. he wanted to bomb the Soviet Union, and Kennedy...
Yes,
avoided that, and Kennedy was afraid that he was being spied upon, so he opened up a kind of a secret line of communication with Khrushchev.
Yes, he did.
And they managed to avoid a World War III.
Absolutely, and I also heard or read that JFK was opened up a dialogue with Fidel Castro.
That is right. That just came out, some interesting stuff there, where, in fact, Castro indirectly, well, he sort of testified to the Warren Commission.
Yes, he did.
The Warren Commission sent their lawyer named William Coleman to meet with Castro on board a yacht down off of Cuba, and they talked for several hours, and Coleman asked him all kinds of questions, and Castro answered them. So Castro did testify to the Warren Commission.
And the speculation is also that if JFK would have continued his presidency, there would have been no Vietnam.
Well, I think it's true, and that is backed up in this book, JFK and the Unspeakable. The author,
right.
James Douglas, goes into a huge amount of detail with the government orders and all sorts of stuff. It's more than I could encapsulate in this show, but this is a book worth reading, JFK and the Unspeakable.
Yes, it is. I ordered it from the library about 2.5, 3 weeks ago. I still haven't heard a word.
Okay, well, okay, we got some more callers.
So. Thank you for opening up this this dialogue, because the young folks really have to know the truth. And
that's right.
Know,
anybody younger than 50 has no memory at all of this.
You bet. And as we all know, the Imperial Empire loves to rewrite history.
That's true. Well, thanks for your call.
Take care, Pat.
Okay, our next caller, who is? George is on the line. Morning, George.
Hey, good morning, Pat. I have a couple of questions, and the first one is, do we need to make it an either-or that is mutually exclusive question when we say, which is right, conspiracy theory or the institutional that is a great man approach? Or
well, that's a good question. It really is. I mean, the CIA is an institution, I think.
Yeah, isn't that something? Yeah.
And if you're part of an institution, that sort of gives an individual license to do various things. You know, people, if you're a member of whatever institution, whether it's a church or a corporation or a military, whatever, you have... You're part of the operation, and you have things to do, and you have anyway. Go ahead.
No, and I recall also in that regard that in Douglas's book he points out that Fletcher Prouty, one of the insiders in the CIA Pentagon liaison group, recounts that he was asked by Alan Dulles to set up a series of offices or a general process whereby in every governmental institution in the federal government there would be at least one, anyway, CIA person who could grease the wheels for whatever the CIA wanted.
Uh-huh.
And then there's another question. And this is in your interview with, I believe, David Talbot, who wrote
Brothers,
he remarked that the mob government connection started during Eisenhower's administration. And a few years ago, I read most of a book called On the Waterfront, and it's a republication of 24 articles written by Malcolm Johnson, the father of Haynes Johnson of the New York Times.
Uh-huh.
And published in 1948, late in the year in the New York Sun newspaper, and it was about, these 24 articles were about crime on the waterfront. And to make a point on that, Johnson said that this didn't start recently. This has been going for years, and it wouldn't continue. And it's an operation in every major city in the United States. Mm-hmm. A mob international syndicate connection, and this could not continue without permission and help from high-up people as far as Washington, D.C., even.
That could be. Actually, you could say it began during World War II when Lucky Luciano was sent to, he was in prison, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They got him out of prison, and he was sent to Italy to kind of organize or liaise with the mafia there regarding the coming U.S. or British invasion of Italy.
Yes, and I've read that in a number of places, and I think that happened. And in the book on the waterfront, with the republication of those 24 articles,
mm-hmm.
In the introduction, Haynes Johnson remarks that his father, I believe, thought that this mob government connection, which was especially murderous and powerful on the New York waterfront in the mm-hmm. hundreds of docks and the hundreds of billions of dollars of business done, was, how could I put it, it was just a part of a working conspiracy that anyone who got in the way would be murdered or pushed out of the way. So I think I just want to leave it there, but this is... He said that he thought it went back to Prohibition, at least.
Well, that could be, too, yeah.
And one more point on that is, mm-hmm. I think that something happened after the revolution in 1917 in Russia, in the United States, and that's worth looking into. It amounted to not only state legislatures, but federal activity by the Bureau of Investigation, which later became the FBI.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these groups got into really high gear, mobilizing to prevent communists or leftists or even people who were a little bit sympathetic from getting jobs in the government or teaching and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll get off the air here, and thanks very much, Per.
Well, thank you. You raised some good points that people ought to kind of check out a little bit.
Thanks so much. Okay. And well, if it weren't for KBOO, a lot of this stuff, you know, mm-hmm. that you interview people, and so many good programs wouldn't even get out there. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Best wishes.
Okay, another caller.
Good morning, Per.
Hi, you're on the air.
I appreciate that. I think there's just a couple of points. It's just the odds are so unlikely that the single shooter fits any of the criteria of the crime.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can reject that.
Oh, I do. Yeah,
out of hand. And Oswald, when he got beaten up by the cops and finally got to talk to the lawyers, he said, "I'm just a patsy. I didn't kill anybody."
Uh-huh. That's true.
And
yes.
The other thing is, as in most problematic situations, you got to follow the money. Who benefits? And clearly the ending of the Vietnam War was going to be very expensive for defense contractors. And Kennedy made a lot of people unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
And as you've already illuminated, you know, the mob was terribly unhappy and the corporations were terribly unhappy, and the hawks were very unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
And the anti-communists that your last caller alluded to would be very unhappy.
Well, that's true. And you know, there's when people say that the mob did it, you know, the mob and the CIA, they've been sort of working together for years and years, and in this instance, you know, it's pretty hard. You know, maybe it's hard to say who was running things and who was just. I know David Talbot has said that Yeah, the mob was part of the Kennedy assassination, but they were not running things. They were sort of the hired hands.
Agreed, but also, again, your last caller alluded to this military-industrial mob connection and governmental, you know, overlap to that and overlay to that. There's certainly lots of potentials, but really this was the American coup. You know, the whole future of the country was derailed, and that the major players, you know, throughout the 60s that were going to fundamentally affect change in this country were killed.
That's true. And, I mean, I would say that, you know, okay, there were three big assassinations. You know, Kennedy was, President John Kennedy was killed. And then according to David Talbot, Bobby right away suspected a conspiracy and that he planned on running for president himself and that if elected, he was going to reopen the investigation. And he was planning on running in 1972, but then Lyndon Johnson bowed out, and so Bobby had to move things up to 68. And we know what happened to him. He was shot down in L.A., and I could go into details there, but...
Sure, lots of suspicious contradictions.
Well,
and again, another patsy, it seems like.
Well, the main one was that Sirhan had a gun. He was shooting wildly in front of Bobby Kennedy. This was in the kitchen of this hotel in L.A. Kennedy had made a speech, and he was leaving with his people. And Sirhan was in front of him about 10 feet away, and the L.A. coroner ruled that that Bobby Kennedy was killed by a shot fired closely from behind. So it could not have been Sirhan.
Well, the other important thing that a lot of young people may not be aware of is that Kennedy had taken California. He had won
the
election.
That's true.
That was his acceptance and thank you speech that he had just finished in the ballroom.
That's right.
He was walking out to go along the campaign trail. And by winning California, that was the most populous state, and his election wasn't quite in the bag, but it was
pretty close.
Very, very highly likely.
That is right, yes. And then, of course, we have the Martin Luther King assassination, which that was also done by sort of the Washington warlords. And an interesting connection was Carlos Marcello, the mob boss in New Orleans, who was working with the CIA previously, and according to one person who participated in the King assassination and confessed his role, said that the money for it came from Carlos Marcello from New Orleans. It went to a Memphis produce dealer who helped plan this thing. So these three assassinations really were... They didn't change America's warlike policy. They sure kicked it up a lot, you know.
Well, the policies would have had much more emphasis on them, and the primary players in all of those three, and several other people that were important that were killed, had a different view of America's future, had a critical view of America's present, and were articulate enough to make people listen.
Okay, well, I thank you for your call. One thing I might just say is that we've been at war ever since, you know?
Yes, so, and we are for the near future and perhaps beyond.
Well, okay, thanks for your call. Let me take the time to tell you what's coming up this morning on KABU at 9 on One Land, Many Voices. We hear a talk by co-host and Palestinian Solidarity activist Ned Rush on finding our voice in the struggle for justice, and also talk by author Max Blumenthal on his book Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. That book has gotten a lot of attention lately. It should be very, very interesting. That's on One Land, Many Voices. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary, Chris Andre. at 10:15 on Flashpoints. These are the stories they're going to cover. J.P. Morgan settles with the U.S. Justice Department for a mere $13 billion, but nobody goes to jail. And also an update on Fukushima as technicians struggle to avoid another major nuclear catastrophe. As we know, they are trying to extract these, 1,500 fuel rods from this damaged reactor building. And at 11, we hear a special interview with historian and author Peter Dale Scott on deep politics and the JFK assassination. That one is not to be missed. Peter Dale Scott is a very eminent authority on all this. Thank you, KBOO members, for your support to keep us strong. And if you're not a member, we hope you become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Okay, we got some more phone calls. Hi, Bob, you're on the line.
Thank you, and I just wanted to say thanks to you for the show, and thanks so much for KBOO being a pillar in our community for critical thought.
Well, we are all KBOO, you know? Takes us all.
It takes a KBOO to make a revolution. Anyway, I had read something years ago that I confirmed yesterday with the author you had on about the assassination, and in my thinking and reading about the mafia and being a kid from Chicago, anytime the assassin is assassinated, that's indicative of a cover-up. And the point I wanted to make was the first person, and this is what I confirmed yesterday, the first person who visited Jack Ruby after he murdered Lee Harvey Oswald was a high-ranking mafia leader from Chicago.
Do we know who that was?
I don't remember the name, and the author yesterday didn't give it, but he confirmed that it definitely was like the three or four number top guy from Chicago.
John Connor, maybe? Or
I don't know. It wasn't his auntie, and it wasn't Jack Ruby's girlfriend or his mom. It was a high-ranking mafia leader, which tells you, I mean, let's get a, it's really is indicative that it leads somewhere that just didn't happen by accident.
It's very interesting. In the book JFK and the Unspeakable, the author tells about apparently there was an attempted assassination in Chicago a few weeks before President Kennedy was in Dallas.
And a lot of people don't know also that there were signs and protests against Kennedy in Dallas and right-wing newspapers calling for his murder and all kinds of crazy
atmosphere
about let's get rid of JFK. But really, I mean, for me, one of the top leaders in Chicago of the mob, which is a zillion-dollar-a-year corporation, basically, visits you, that doesn't happen by accident.
That's very important.
So
that's
right. Thank you very much for letting me make a comment. Take care.
Well, thank you. Okay, we have another caller. Joe is on the line. Hi, Joe. Hello.
There, now you can hear me better.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Yeah, now we hear you.
Okay. The other night on Oregon Petroleum Broadcasting, on a show called NOVA, Secrets of the Dead, funded by the David H. Koch Foundation, so there's a lot of things that stink there already, three things.
Uh-huh.
But they did a special on, they had a father and son ballistics team experts. The old man was probably in his 60s or so, and the son was probably in his 40s. And these guys, I can't remember their names, I've never heard of them before, but they did a... they showed how they took the rifle that's not the exact same rifle, but a copy of the rifle that Oswald bought, which, by the way, he bought it through some kind of mail order thing.
That's right.
And even in 1963 price, he paid, well, in the price he paid at the time, I think, was somewhere around $12 or $9.
Something like that, yes. Uh-huh.
And so this was just a cheap, piece of junk, more than likely.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what they did, now, I'm not saying that what this so-called experiment that they did is actually true, but they took what looked to be pieces of 1-inch thick pine board, I guess, which is usually used for ballistics tests, and they sandwiched them together. They didn't glue them, but they just kind of clamped them together in this device that they had, rifle range, and this thing is like 3 feet thick. And now, pine is pretty light wood. It's not like oak or, something else like that,
Right. Uh-huh.
Even lighter, easier for a bullet to go through than, like, say, Douglas fir, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they fired through these 1-inch thick pieces of pine board that were like 1 foot square or whatever.
Yeah.
And it went damn near all the way through the 3 foot thick chunk of these little, you know, they started at the back end, numbered 36, and they went, and it went down to about like, it went in there like 30 inches or somewhere thereabouts, approximately.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And the bullet was, get this, according to what they showed on their little video, and of course those things can be manipulated, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But this bullet was fully intact because they said it was a hard-shelled bullet. And it was kind of, it wasn't the super sharp, pointed type of bullet you would find like in a hunting rifle. And I'm not a hunting expert by any matter of means. Matter of fact, I don't know much about it. But the point of it is I've seen plenty of bullets around over the years. And the ones that they use for hunting are usually, and in military, are usually pretty pointy at the tip. This thing was fairly rounded. And they said it was actually more stable than a military bullet would be, because the military bullets are more pointy.
Mm-hmm.
And that it had more contact with the rifling in the barrel, so therefore it was more accurate. And it did have an upward, it went in, the guy hit it right through about the middle of the 1 foot square pine board on the front. And the last board, this 1-inch thick board, and this stack of boards that was stacked in horizontally, that they shot at, it kind of trajectored up, kind of, you know, like it was lifting. They called it yaw, you know, where it
Was this to kind of give support to the single, the magic bullet theory?
Yeah, you know, and here's the one thing that really made me think this whole thing stinks, is that when they were covering the part of why Kennedy's head went whipping back at a sudden rate of speed.
Right.
They said it was the muscles in your back are stronger than the muscles in your abdomen area, and so it caused his head to whip back.
Oh, well.
And I just go, you know, I'm a retired EMT, and I am not an expert on anatomy and physiology, and that may be true that your muscles in your back are stronger than your abs in most people, but his nerve cord was already severed by the bullet where it made him clutch his throat more than likely, you know. I mean, he had enough time to probably clutch his throat, and then after that, he was dead from the neck down.
Yeah, well.
You know? And then the second bullet that hit the top of his noggin and blew a chunk of his skull off. And see, they didn't say his skull. They just said something about, I can't remember, what was the excuse they said for Jackie jumping up on the trunk?
Okay.
But anyway, go check this thing out and see how much it, on the stink factor that you think it is, and everybody else look at it. It's on Nova. I think it's called Secrets of the Dead. It's about JFK. It was on there about 5 days ago.
Oh, okay. Well, check it out.
But
look up Nova.
The whole thing stinks to me. There was a guy on another radio late-night talk show, which I won't even give them the courtesy of mentioning their name, but they had this guy on there because I believe this it's owned by Clear Channel, which is just a propaganda dissemination service for the nutty the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
But anyway, he said it was Johnson that had that was behind it, and he had all of his facts and figures.
Well, that's
who it was.
That's one of the theories I mentioned. I think there's a book out about that, actually written by some Republican guy.
That was the guy that was on the show. I don't trust anybody that's a Repiglicon.
Former Nixon aide or something like that.
He's been with Nixon. He's been with Reagan. He's been with a number of presidents in one form or another as a as one of their support. Well, not a supporter, as kind of one of their backdoor men, you know, the guy that's kind of doing the work behind the scenes.
Okay, well, thanks for that information.
Yeah,
and
hey, thank you for the show. And
people check out Nova. Look at see it for yourself
and see what the stink factor is to
okay.
you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Okay, we have another caller. I think. Hello there.
Hi. How you doing?
Well, doing fine. How are you?
Yes, I like my comment is that President Kennedy was involved in other assassinations, and people forget about the assassination of the Vietnamese president, Kim.
Yes.
And also, he was trying to assassinate Fidel Castro.
Okay.
And Fidel Castro, during interviews, said he was, during that time period, there was like 39 attempts on his life.
Okay.
And so if you were a leader of Cuba, you know, Kennedy was trying to assassinate you when you tried to assassinate him.
Well, that's one of the other theories, that that this was sort of done as sort of a kind of revenge, or done by the Cubans through Oswald. But actually, in JFK and the Unspeakable, the author there goes in a lot of detail about the assassination of Ngo Dinh Diem, the president of South Vietnam. And according to that book, Kennedy didn't like it. He was sort of stuck with Henry Cabot Lodge, who was masterminding. He was the ambassador to Vietnam. And Kennedy was kind of boxed in, and you know, that he sort of reluctantly went along with this, and he was sort of pushed into it, and that when it turned out that Diem and his brother were killed by the Vietnamese generals, Kennedy was really shocked and very, very upset. That is another slant on that idea. As far as the plot to kill Castro, I mean, they began long before, and there is a question of just, you know, who is in, when CIA is assassinating people, it may not always go up to the top. There are rogue agents, there are factions within the CIA. And an interesting article by Tom Hayden that's just out recently, that there was sort of a dual track going on here with President Kennedy. And it's sort of, a lot of times you have say a peaceful track and a warlike track, and there they are, they're operating at the same time. And it takes you know, say if Kennedy did want to shift to a peaceful track or a more peaceful track, this is not a thing that happens overnight. You know, you sort of gradually shift from one to the other. So that is a way of looking at these plots to kill Castro. But anyway.
Yeah, and another theory was why the mob probably was probably involved in the assassination was President Kennedy, after failing in the Bay of Pigs, decided, you know, just leave Cuba alone. And mm-hmm. the mafia, you know, before 1960, controlled Cuba.
That's
and
right.
They were making millions and millions of dollars in gambling, because nowadays gambling's available in all states, but mm-hmm. back then Vegas and 3 miles off the coastal waters, that's the only place you could gamble.
That's true. Actually, yes, there's a book out, I can't think of the name of that book, Havana Nights or something like that, about this whole the mafia's role in Cuba. It's a very good book. And, you know, we mentioned Lucky Luciano earlier, about he was one of the first mafia guys to kind of work with the government during World War II. After the war, when he did get out of prison, he was one of the mafia guys who was heavily invested in the gambling establishments in Cuba. So there is that connection.
Yeah, well, that's my comments I have for today. Oh. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. This is KBOO, and we are doing a special talk show on the 50-year anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. It's on KBOO, your radio station. Another caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, doing okay.
Hey, I noticed you mentioned Noam Chomsky earlier. And, I don't believe that he doesn't believe in conspiracy theories. He believes that the rich folks go to the same schools, the same professors, same textbooks, meet in the same place.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, they talk about stuff.
Oh, sure.
It's always been that way.
Uh-huh.
The indoctrination system here, though, is very, very powerful, so it obviously influences the people in power also. I don't really care about the details of the assassination. I mean, you know, you could say it's the only president assassinated in modern times, but the facts are that this guy's dad was a gangster, made a bunch of money, you know, selling liquor, I think, at drugstores, and the mob gave him the election. They stole the election by giving him Chicago or Illinois or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and the mob expected that they would not be bothered after that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the younger brother decided to go after him.
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty obvious. But what I'd like to talk about actually is why everybody romanticizes this so much. I believe that the idea is, Chomsky wrote a book in the 90s called The Camelot Revisited. That was because of the Oliver Stone movie, which, you know, may have been presented fairly well, but, you know, rested on this assumption that, you know, you stated a couple times, that somehow these Kennedy brothers were going to lead us to peace and out of Vietnam.
Well, they were moving. I think they were moving in that direction.
Well, Chomsky points out in this book, there's actually no proof for that at all.
Well,
now it is true that Bobby had some sort of conversion during the 68 presidential campaign, but these guys basically started the whole secret wars, culminated in the wars in the 80s in Central America, by supplying the natives with the arms instead of going in and killing them themselves.
Well, all I can say is, if you read JFK and the Unspeakable by James W. Douglas, he puts forth the idea that President Kennedy was intending to withdraw all the troops from Vietnam, and the book goes into great detail. It quotes all kinds of people and the executive order, and they're all footnoted, so... you know, Chomsky, I think Chomsky, yeah, he may believe that there are conspiracies, but he thinks they are not important, you know, that they're...
No, they're just ongoing, and mm-hmm. amongst the people that are in power, of course, they're going to talk. And I'd like to point out that, you know, Kennedy, I think, caught the public's imagination. He had the deb of the year as a wife, but he also was screwing literally everybody around him.
Oh, of course, yes.
They had the nice interview with the 18-year-old intern who was... You know, apparently one of his first conquests.
Yes, that's
she's
right.
She's still giggling like a little girl, even though she's 70 years old.
Yes, I heard about that. Yes,
I'd like to point out that Obama is very similar to this, in fact.
Well, we don't know that Obama is doing any hanky-panky like that.
No, not with that. I'm just saying that Obama is very similar to Kennedy in a number of ways, but he doesn't have the deb of the year for a wife.
Well, one thing I wonder about Obama, whether, you know, he's taking certain measures to get out of Afghan. It's hard to say what he intends to do, and I sort of sometimes wonder whether he remembers what's happened to Kennedy and kind of has sort of been forewarned. But, yeah. You know, you don't have to idealize Kennedy to realize that he did a lot that really enraged the Washington warlords. You know, I mean, he doesn't have to be a progressive or even a liberal to do that, but he did. He had them really angered, and so, you know, with all his faults.
But I don't think they had anything to do with him being killed. You got to remember, this guy came up red baiting and commie bashing like all the politicians.
That's
did.
True. Yes,
to be
that's true.
Hand to hand and foot, you know, with the civil rights stuff.
Well, sort of. Okay.
I just don't believe, you know, to say they pulled the troops out of Vietnam and that's going to cause peace. I don't believe that at all.
Well,
he was very interested in doing the whole commie thing. Whether he had troops in Vietnam or not, he would have put troops somewhere else.
Well, according to James Douglas in that book, The Unspeakable, that Kennedy had come to the conclusion that the Vietnam War was unwinnable and that it was up to the South Vietnamese themselves to, you know, settle things.
So that was the line. That doesn't sound any different to me than what eventually happened.
Well, what happened was that LBJ became president and really escalated the war, and it destroyed his presidency. It destroyed all the good things that Johnson did, like in civil rights and the war on poverty. They kind of ran out of steam because the war was sucking up all our nation's money and energy.
Could have been. I just, you know, Chomsky presents it fairly well. There wasn't any proof that the Kennedys would have done it any differently.
Well, read JFK and the Unspeakable and see who's proving what. That's all I can say.
I think this stuff is Chomsky's one big point in that book was that many people have spent countless hours obsessing over this stuff, and they could have used that time and energy to actually learn about the world and try to do some good in the world.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think it's... You know, I think Chomsky's got a lot of good stuff, but I really have to disagree with him on that. I mean,
I actually don't think this is worth obsessing over.
Well, we're not obsessing. I think it's worth finding out the truth, though.
Why?
Well,
it,
I don't know.
Does it have any impact on what happens today? Is going to change people's understanding?
Yeah, well, yes,
today?
Because...
No, it's not. It's not. They're not looking at today. They're looking at stuff that happened 50 or 60 years ago.
Well, no. If you
happened since then.
If you include Bobby, the assassination of Robert Kennedy and the assassination of Martin Luther King, And you see all the wars that this country has been in since then. It's that, basically, I mean, this is my opinion.
And you somehow believe if they wouldn't have been assassinated, we wouldn't have been the war machine in the Imperial Empire that we are. I just don't believe
no.
that.
No, well, it might have put a dent in the war in the warlord's plans. That's all I can say. I don't know. You can't say with certainty, but if the troops had been withdrawn from Vietnam, a lot of people would be alive today who were killed.
I'm not sure of that at all. And these beliefs you have, I think drives this obsession with the Kennedy assassination, and I just don't think it's based on reality.
You get obsessed with something else then, but all I can
Learn about today. Learn about why we have millions of people in jail for the drug war and indoctrination.
Well, we got here.
12-step.
Where we are today has... We are here today because of things that happened in the past. So anyway, I don't know if we have a couple more callers. If we can get them in. Thanks for your input. Okay, who's next?
Yeah, this is Jake. I'm glad to see you. KBOO is thriving with Tom Hartman on the airwaves. I think that's only going to help. But if you want to take a look at that memo that you're referring to, it's called NSAM 63, National Security Amendment 1963. It talks about a complete withdrawal of troops from Vietnam by Christmas, and that was the last straw that broke the back and got Bell Helicopter and these other people saying, okay, we got to make sure this war continues. And also, if you want to, there's a book that's very, very little known. It's called Treason for My Daily Bread. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
It explains why Kennedy's head flew back and why the big flap of skin flew up. I'm sorry for the graphics, but he got killed with a .45 caliber pistol round, and that explains the ballistics of why his head snapped back. All this BS on Nova about back muscles being stronger than your stomach muscles. Don't waste your time on Nova or nauseating pasteurized radio, because nothing you hear on there is going to do anything other than support the establishment status quo.
Okay, well, thanks for that input. I think we got one more call we're going to try and squeeze in. Hi, you're on the air. Hello? Tom.
Yes, hi.
Yes.
My name's Tom.
Uh-huh.
And, first off, thank you so much for having this show. When I was in college, I did my senior thesis on the Kennedy assassination.
Uh-huh.
The question of, did Oswald take the Mannlicher Carcano in? Which you cut to the chase and say no.
Uh-huh.
But there are so many other things. The Commission Exhibit 399, the magic bullet, it did enter below his neck at the third vertebrae,
mm-hmm.
and then it had to travel up, as that one person said, that it traveled up. But then it also had to miraculously travel down. So it traveled up, and then it traveled down,
right.
and then it caused, seven wounds.
It went into Governor Connolly, and then they found it on a gurney in the hospital.
On the carpet. And then there's some controversy about the bullet itself. The chain of evidence is in doubt.
Right.
There was anyway. There's just a whole bunch of information out there.
Uh-huh.
But people, like the one person that was on who sounded terribly cynical about why bother, it's because it's our country and it's our history. And,
that's right.
The way people who don't vote do vote because they vote for the right wing,
mm-hmm.
and they vote for the corporatists.
Well, if people do want to find out, there are books that tell, that give information. So thanks for your call. I think we got to wrap up this show. We've been talking about the assassination of President John Kennedy, and stay tuned for Air Cascadia. Oh, no, it's all One Land, Many Voices comes next. Stay tuned.
This is KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 9 o'clock a.m. Coming up on One Land, Many Voices, we hear a talk by co-host and Palestinian solidarity activist Ned Roche on finding our voice in the struggle for justice, and a talk by author Max Blumenthal on his book Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, and at 10:15, Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, we hear a special interview with historian and author Peter Dale Scott. Thank you, KBOO members, for your sustained support to keep us strong. If you are not a member, you can become a member by going to kboo.fm. You click on Donate Today. Stay tuned.
You're listening to One Land, Many Voices on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. My name is Zaha Hassan.
And I'm Ned Roche.
To resounding applause from the representatives of the vast majority of the 193 member states of the UN, on November 18th, the State of Palestine voted for the first time in the General Assembly, pursuant to rules that permit observer states to cast ballots in the election of judges to international criminal tribunals. Israel's Deputy Ambassador to the United Nations, David Roet, responded to the celebratory mood in the Assembly Hall by saying that the Palestinian Authority is not a state and that it does not meet the criteria for statehood. Of course, the enduring problem with Palestine's bid for recognition as a state is its lack of effective control over its borders, a situation caused by Israel's 46-year-old occupation over the West Bank and Gaza.
Yes, lots going on at the UN this month. A week from today, November 29th, is an important day for those of us who support human rights and justice for the 10 million Palestinians living under occupation or in the diaspora, because it's the UN-established International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. This day of solidarity has been commemorated around the world since 1978. November 29th.